Hello, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 24th. I am Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports, and we're going to do basketball first. That's going to take us through pretty much the entire first half of the program. Then we'll do baseball second, and hopefully I'll have a time to read a story about Christian Hayes, who is a UConn football player, and they're feeling that he may be eligible, or he is eligible, but maybe drafted to the NFL, which that draft is coming up, I believe it's this weekend. I'm not sure. Probably will say in the article. So we're going to start with college basketball. We'll start with Dan Hurley and the UConn men's basketball team have a lot of production to replace next season as they chase a three-peat, something that hasn't been done since Bill Walton was in a UCLA uniform. The Huskies started their roster building for next season by landing Terrace Reed Jr., an athletic big man from Michigan. Next on the list of D's figures to be adding at least another three-point shooter with Cam Spencer and possibly Alex Caravan departing, UConn is in the mix for the nation's top three-point shooter from last season, Dayton guard Kobe Bray, who entered his name into the transfer portal last week. That's spelled B-R-E-A. Bray's list of future schools includes five blue bloods, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, and Connecticut. The 6'6", 205-pound guard is in high demand after shooting a ridiculous 49.8% from three-point range last season, knocking down three of his 6.1 attempts per game. It's not like he didn't shoot much from deep either. Those three makes it per game ranked 26th in all of Division I and just a fraction off the top of 15. Creighton's Baylor Scheinerman was tied for 15th nationally at 3.1 makes per game. Bray averaged 11.1 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 1.2 assists per game. And though he came off the bench most of the season, he played starters minutes, averaging 29.1 per game. He was clutch in the Flyers' first-round NCAA tournament win over Nevada, scoring 15 points and knocking down 5 of 8 three-point attempts as Dayton stormed back from a 17-point deficit with just over 7 minutes to go in a stirring 63-60 win. Though he seems to have his pick of schools to choose from, UConn may have a leg up in the race to land Bray simply because of where he's from. The Washington Heights, New York native played high school basketball at Monsignor Scanlon, a private school in the Bronx, and a large contingent of fans followed him to road games in the Atlantic 10, according to Dayton Daily News men's basketball reporter David Jamblowski. If I had to pick one of these five schools, I would think he'll go with UConn. Everything else being equal, Jablonski told The Current on Tuesday, his family and friends were a big traveling party to so many of his games on the East Coast. Huge crowds at Fordham, LaSalle, they go everywhere to see Kobe play. If he can land at UConn, I'm sure a lot of people will support that. Jablonski described Bray as an extremely consistent player for the Flyers, rarely having an off night. His season high in scoring came on November 29th when he put up 22 points against SMU, and he scored 15 and 14 in Dayton's two NCAA tournament games, the second a loss to number 2 seed Arizona. Bray did all of this despite having surgery to insert metal rods in both of his legs last April to address stress fractures he had been playing through. He'd mostly add three-point shooting. Jablonski said he didn't take it to the basket much because when you're shooting 50% from three, why would you? But won't take the shots outside of the offense. He was pretty selective in the shots he would take, Jablonski said. There were times his teammates told him, you need to shoot more, take over the game. Dayton fans were disappointed Bray decided to enter the transfer portal after spending 4 years at the school, but it's clear his NIL opportunities were too good to pass up. ESPN's Jeff Borzello reported Tuesday that Bray held Zoom meetings with his finalists and is still deciding on which schools to visit. UConn is also in the mix to land five-star wing Liam McNeely, another three-point specialist who played high school basketball alongside Cooper Flagg at Montverde Academy in Florida last season. McNeely's official visit to Storrs began on Monday. The UConn men's basketball program is finalizing a home-and-home series with Texas that will begin next season. College basketball insider John Rothstein reported Tuesday morning. Later, Rothstein reported that the matchups for the Big East Big 12 battle are set, and UConn will also host a showdown with Baylor. According to Rothstein, the series would begin in Austin with a return game in Connecticut during the 2025-26 season, though no specific dates or game times have been revealed, and there is no timetable on the official announcement. UConn is 7-3 all-time against the Longhorns, including an Empire Classic matchup at Madison Square Garden in November, which the Huskies won 81-71 on their way to back-to-back national titles. The first matchup between the programs came in 1991, a 94-77 UConn win, but they hadn't met since 2015 in Austin. That was a 71-66 UConn win. Both teams are expected to look very different when they meet next season. Texas stars Dylan Mitchell and Tyrese Hunter, who combined for 34 points against UConn, both entered the transfer portal following the season. Mitchell will test Pro Waters, and Hunter announced Monday his move to Memphis. The Longhorns will also lose Max Abmas, Dylan Disu, and Brock Cunningham as their eligibility expires. Coach Rodney Terry has added three players from the transfer portal: in guard Julian Larry and forward Jason Kent, both from Indiana State, as well as guard Trayman Mark, the former leading scorer at Arkansas. Trey Johnson, ESPN's number 5 recruit in the 2024 class, and Nick Cody, number 78, are also set to join the program. UConn could lose all five of its starters to the NBA draft, with Donovan Klingon and Stephon Castle each declaring as projected lottery picks, and Alex Caravan testing the waters. Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer will also pursue professional opportunities as their eligibility expires. Hassan Diarra, the Big East Sixth Man of the Year, has yet to decide whether he'll use his fifth year, though to this point, little-used Apostolos Ramoglu is the only Husky to have entered the portal. Dan Hurley and staff landed former Michigan Big Terrace Reed Jr. out of the portal and are looking for more additions as they host five-star 2024 recruit Liam McNeely on campus this week. McNeely, the number 9 player in the class per ESPN, could join incoming freshman Ahmad Noel, number 34, and Isaiah Abraham, number 58. Meanwhile, UConn has only played Baylor once, a 96-88 win back on December 28, 1965. But the programs have been among the best in college basketball for the several last years. Huskies officially signed Terrace Reed Jr. Reed, a rising junior with 2 years of eligibility remaining, officially signed with the Huskies on Tuesday. A 6'10 center from St. Louis, Missouri, Reed averaged 6.1 points and 5.5 rebounds through 66 games over 2 seasons at Michigan. He started in 31 games during the 2023-24 season, averaging 9 points with 7.2 rebounds and 1.4 block shots per game. "We are very excited to have a big man with Terrace high major experience join our program," Hurley said in a team release. "His size, talent, and athleticism at the center position gives us the potential to continue receiving tremendous production from that spot, which has contributed so much to our success the last 2 years. His work ethic fits perfectly into the culture we've established, and we are really looking forward to Terrace's career as a Husky." Jamal Murray didn't even see the biggest basket of his career, at least not live, he didn't. Murray swished a step-back 15-footer over Anthony Davis at the buzzer Monday night, giving the Nuggets a stunning 101-99 win over the Lakers and capping a comeback from a 20-point second-half deficit. Murray tumbled into the Nuggets bench along with Davis just as his shot fluttered in the net and the roar from the crowd shook Ball Arena. I just lost my balance and fell. I think AD was in my way, or somebody was in my way, and I just heard everybody scream, and that's how I knew it went in, said Murray, who was mobbed by his teammates after his bucket gave the reigning NBA champions their 10th consecutive win over the Lakers. More importantly, it gave the second-seeded Nuggets a 2-0 lead in a Western Conference first-round series that shifts to Los Angeles for Game 3 on Thursday night. Murray missed 13 of his first 16 shots and was easily the most flustered, frazzled, and frustrated of all his teammates when it appeared the Nuggets would lose to the seventh-seeded Lakers for the first time in 494 days. I told my teammates when I was struggling, I'm going to look for y'all, and every single one of them told me to keep shooting, recounted Murray, who did just that, going 6-for-8 for 14 points in the fourth quarter to finish with 20 points. Davis led the Lakers with 32 points. LeBron James had 26 points, plus a major beef with the officiating, and D'Angelo Russell added 23 with a career playoff high, 7 threes, including 6 in the first half, to help the Lakers build a 59-44 lead at the break. Also, the NBA and Denver police are looking into an incident in which a man reported to be one of the brothers of Nuggets star Nikola Jokic was seen punching a fan after the team's victory. In videos shared by TMZ and other outlets, the man is seen climbing over seats to confront another person at Ball Arena, who he then punches in the face. The 76ers' Tyrese Maxey was fouled twice before his turnover that led to the go-ahead three-pointer by Dante DiVincenzo in the Knicks' victory in Game 2 of their Eastern Conference first-round series, the NBA determined Tuesday. In its last 2 minutes report, the league also said that 76ers coach Nick Nurse twice attempted to call timeouts that were neither recognized nor granted by the officials during the possession. The seventh-seeded 76ers plan to file a grievance regarding the officiating after falling into a 2-0 hole in the series following the second-seeded Knicks' 104-101 victory on Monday night. Jalen Suggs made a stunning comeback for the Magic in Game 2. The Magic need to make one of their own to save their season. Suggs shook off what appeared to be a serious injury to the guard's left knee and played most of the second half as the fifth-seeded Magic lost 96-86 to the fourth-seeded Cavaliers on Monday night to fall behind 0-2 in their East series. Unable to put any weight on his leg, Suggs was carried off the floor in the first quarter in pain and crying. He played in the second half with a sleeve on his leg and says he expects to play in Game 3 on Thursday in Orlando. And I think I can get this story in before the weather. More mid-range pull-up jumpers might help remedy Jalen Brunson's off-shooting nights in the Knicks' first-round playoff series against the Philadelphia 76ers. Brunson shot 8 of 29 against the Sixers in Game 2 and 8 of 26 from the field in Game 1. He's meeting a swarm of bodies when he drives to the paint, plus an elongated extended arm closing out on a three-point attempts courtesy of the 6'8" bodies the 76ers use, Kelly Oubre Jr., Nick Batum, Tobias Harris, to chase the star Knicks guard around the court. Yet Brunson is finding success in the stop-and-pop game, specifically around the foul line, extended and when driving on the right side of the floor toward the baseline. The Knicks were also successful in Game 2 when they screened high close to half court for Brunson, who then used his speed to create distance from his defender before generating a quality offensive possession. He also found ways to manipulate the Sixers' defense in the second half, forcing defenders collapse before finding Isaiah Hartenstein frequently for easily dumped off passes at the rim. Hartenstein went scoreless in the first half but finished Game 2 with 14 points on 7-8 shooting from the field to go with 8 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 blocks on the night. I just love the way he's wired and So just keep going. You never know when something changes, head coach Tom Thibodeau said of Brunson. Despite the off-shooting night, the star Knicks guard also added 8 rebounds and 6 assists while turning the ball over just once. He's rebounding the ball. He's playmaking. He's not hesitating. And look, they're paying a lot of attention to him, which is opening up other things for us. So just keep going. And that's what I love. I want all our guys like them. We're going to go to the weather now, and I will be back with more sports after that.
Guidepost Magazine is on Saturday afternoons at 3 and Sunday mornings at 7:30 on Chris.
The forecast for tonight is mostly clear, with a low around 29. Tomorrow, Thursday, will be sunny, with a high near 58. And tomorrow night will be clear, with a low around 32. Friday will be sunny, with a high near 62. And Friday night will be mostly clear, with a low around 38. Saturday will be mostly sunny, with a high near 62. And Saturday night, there's a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, with a low around 45. Have a good evening. Thank you for listening to Chris.
We're going to do the Celtics now. The Celtics tied a franchise postseason record for made three-pointers in Game 1 of their first-round playoff series. They blew out the Miami Heat by 20 points and led by as many as 34. What must they do Wednesday night to avoid a Game 2 letdown? Ratchet up the physicality against their underdog opponents. Better is what we did with higher intensity and higher physicality, Celtics coach John Mazzulla said after Tuesday's practice at the Auerbach Center. I think that's what Game 2 calls for. Top-seeded Boston boasts a far more talented roster than number 8 seed Miami, especially with Heat star Jimmy Butler expected to miss the entire series with a knee injury. That disparity showed in Sunday's opener, with 7 different Celtics sinking multiple threes and the team going 22 for 49, 44.9% from deep in a 114-94 victory at TD Garden. The Heat went 12 for 37, 32.4% from three, and half of their makes came in the fourth quarter, with Boston up big. The Celtics' intensity did wane at times, however. The Heat battled back from a 17-2 deficit in the first quarter and outscored Boston 35-23 in the fourth. If you think that you're not going to see a different version of Miami in Game 2, then you're kidding yourself, Mazzulla said, of the team that eliminated the Celtics in 2 of the last 4 NBA postseasons. So at the end of the day, it's about giving what the game needs and having the expectation that it's just going to be a fight, and just get ready for the fight. Jaylen Brown reiterated that same word, fight, multiple times when describing what the Celtics must do to take a 2-0 lead in the best-of-7 series. Every game is a fight, said Brown, who had 17 points and 8 rebounds in Game 1. You've got to win the game. You've got to win the fight. Both of those things are important, and we embrace both. We've got a good game plan for Game 2. We feel good about it, but we've got to win the fight. I can't stress that enough. Speaking of fights, one nearly broke out on the court in the final minute of Game 1 after Heat forward Caleb Martin upended Celtics star Jason Tatum while the latter was jumping for a rebound. Brown and Kristaps Porzingis rushed in to confront Martin, leading to a brief scuffle beneath the basket. Brown said he sent a stern message to Martin, who was a surprise standout in Miami's Eastern Conference Finals upset of Boston last season. Martin scored 4 points in 29 minutes on Sunday and was 0 for 4 from three-point range. I just told him to watch that, making sure it's basketball plays being made out here, Brown said. We know they like to play hard and be physical, but there's a line, so making sure we're not crossing the integrity of the game, I just told him to watch it. He added, seeing a guy go down, I've got my guys back 10 times out of 10. Game 2 at TD Garden tips off Wednesday night, that's tonight, at 7 p.m. And let me see if we have any hockey here. Yes. Golden Knights captain Mark Stone scored quickly after missing 2 months, and his linemate Tomas Hurl had a goal in his playoff debut for the reigning Stanley Cup champions. Stone and Hurdle scored on the only power plays for the Knights, who opened defense of their title with a 4-3 win over the top-seeded Stars in their Western Conference first-round series on Monday night in Dallas. Hurdle was one of three trade acquisitions for the Knights, while Stone was on the IL after he lacerated his spleen February 20th. Zach Hyman had three goals and an assist in his first postseason hat trick. Connor McDavid had five assists, and the Oilers beat the Kings 7-4 in Game 1 of their Eastern Conference series Monday. The Oilers had lost the first game of their last seven playoff series and hadn't won Game 1 of a series at home since 1990. Austin Matthews scored to snap a third-period tie, and the Maple Leafs beat the host Bruins 3-2 on Monday to knot their E-Series at one game apiece. Sebastian Ho and Jordan Martinook scored 9 seconds apart late in the third to help the Hurricanes complete a comeback from three goals down to beat the visiting Islanders 5-3 on Monday. That gave the Hurricanes a 2-0 lead in the E-Series. Now on to baseball. The local teams last night, the Guardians defeated the Red Sox by a score of 4-1, the Giants 5, the Mets 1, the Yankees 4, the A's 3. There are no games for me to report other than those three because they were all late games that did not make the current. And now we have a story on the Red Sox. Red Sox manager Alex Cora provided a discouraging update on Tristan Cass's injury, telling reporters in Cleveland that the first baseman had a fractured rib and will miss an extended period of time. "He has a fracture, so he'll be out for a while," Cora said, as transcribed by MLB.com's Ian Brown. "Obviously, we had a pretty good idea a few days ago, but after all the tests in Boston, that's what came out. We just have to be patient now. Timetable? There's none. This has to heal on its own. We've just got to be patient." Cassis was placed on the injured list with what was originally described as a left rib strain on Sunday after leaving Saturday's game after one at-bat. Following the game, Cora expressed immediate concern, and now it appears the Red Sox could be without their up-and-coming first baseman for a long time. Even amid the season's early run of injuries, losing Cassis is a particularly devastating blow. Through the first 3 weeks of the season, the 24-year-old had already hit six homers and posted a .857 OPS. Cora said Bobby Dalbec will get the majority of the playing time at first base going forward, despite the fact Dalbec is currently 1-for-30, .033 on the season through his first 14 games. If the Red Sox decide to seek outside alternatives, a number of players could become available next week following the upcoming May 1st opt-out window. Another possibility is veteran first baseman Garrett Cooper, who the Chicago Cubs designated for assignment on Tuesday. The 33-year-old is currently batting .270 through 12 games and was an All-Star in 2022 with the Miami Marlins. Now over to the Yankees. Gerrit Cole isn't ready to throw off a mound just yet. However, the Yankees' ace continues to move in the right direction. Cole is now throwing from 120 feet after making 50 tosses on Tuesday at Yankee Stadium. He said he isn't sure when he will toe the slab for the first time since being sidelined with elbow inflammation in spring training, but Aaron Boone said the righty might get on a mound soon. "I don't necessarily think it means he's getting on the mound immediately," the manager said before the Yankees play the A's on Tuesday. "It may be sometime next week. But I know at least so far the process and how he's done and how it's going is encouraging." Cole will take Wednesday off, added that he doesn't know how many more catch sessions he needs to complete before throwing off a mound. He also wasn't sure if he would travel for the Yankees' upcoming trips to Milwaukee and Baltimore. However, the reigning Cy Young winner said that he's happy with his progress thus far. Cole's elbow hasn't been an issue since his throwing program began on April 8th. "It's kind of a similar ramp-up to what an off-season would be like," Cole said. "That's kind of what we're working off of. I'm just trying to nail it, not go too fast, not go too slow either. I'm out to 120, so it's moving. It's moving along." DJ LeMahieu, working his way back from a non-displaced fracture in his right foot, began a rehab assignment at AA Somerset on Tuesday. Boone said the initial plan is for the third baseman to play in four minor league games. In addition to Tuesday's contest, LeMayu is expected to play on Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Boone said there's a chance LeMayu joins the Yankees for their trip to Baltimore next week. Anthony Rizzo took a .227 average and just one home run into Tuesday's action. The typically slick fielder has also made a few mishaps in the field this season. I do believe last night Rizzo did hit a home run, so that would be his second. Because the first baseman played and scuffled through both concussion symptoms last year, some have wondered if he is okay. Rizzo also has had recurring back issues in the past. Yeah, Rizzo succinctly said Monday when asked if he's healthy. As for his struggles, Rizzo said, "It's a grind. Take it one day at a time. I'm seeing the ball well. I just have to take better swings." Seeing the ball was an issue for Rizzo last year. So far this season, Boone said the veteran could benefit from being a little more selective. He's probably chasing results a little bit and aware that he hasn't hit for a lot of power yet, Boone said. So maybe even by his standards, you start expanding a little bit more. Back on April 1st, it was announced the Yankees pitching prospect Tristan Wierlin would make his affiliated pro debut at AA Somerset. The 2022 third-round pick spent his draft year at the Yankees complex in Tampa, and he missed the 2023 campaign with a stress fracture in his elbow. Still, the Yankees felt the 23-year-old could handle AA. "I think they feel good about a college kid with a pretty good pedigree who throws strikes," Matt Blake told the Daily News when the decision was made. "They felt good about pushing him a little bit." Wierlin has responded well to the nudge, recording a 0.48 ERA, 18 strikeouts, and 6 walks over 3 starts in 18 and 2/3 innings. The righty ranked the Yankees' 23rd best prospect by MLB.com, most recently held the Hartford Yard Goats hitless over 7 and 2/3 innings on April 19. On Tuesday, Wierlin was named the Eastern League Pitcher of the Week. And I don't have much time left. I'm just going to touch on that article that I mentioned at the beginning on UConn's Christian Haynes. "For a program that hasn't had much success in the field the last decade, UConn has developed and sent a number of players to the NFL with solid reputations. The latest will be Christian Haynes, interior lineman, in which experts see the positional size and advanced skill level to be a starter in the league. Haynes started 49 games at right guard in college," noted Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN's draft analyst, "and he allowed just one sack over his final 3 seasons. He's my number 3 ranked player at the position." Kiper, in his mock draft April 10th, projected Haynes as the 55th pick in the draft going to Miami in the second round. NFL.com's Lance Zierlein rates Haynes as a late second or early third round pick. "Haynes plays with football intelligence and sees every snap as a mandate to move opponents and finish blocks," Zierlein writes. "His draft slotting could be affected by a lack of length and being limited to one position, but his determined playing style counters those factors. He's not overly rangy, but wipes out targets on pulling blocks and is capable in space and in pass protection. The hand usage can get sloppy, allowing opponents to slip away from him, and he has a tendency to do too much grabbing. All things considered, he might outplay his draft slotting and become a solid NFL starter." NFL draft buzz.com projects Haynes in the second round, emerging from a modest 2-star recruit in 2018, the site reports. "Christian Haynes has defied expectations, becoming a linchpin for Connecticut's offensive line with an impressive 49 consecutive starts at right guard. Over his collegiate career, Haynes distinguished himself not just through durability, but also with back-to-back third-team All-American honors in his junior year." And what's on the air today? Not too much. Baseball, we have 6 p.m. Boston at Cleveland on NESN, Radio 1080 WTIC, 7 p.m. Oakland at the Yankees, Prime Video, Radio 97.9. In hockey, East Conference first-round playoff, Boston at Toronto, Game 3 on ESPN. The Western Conference first-round playoff, Vegas at Dallas, Game 2, ESPN. And at 10 p.m., Western Conference first-round playoff, Los Angeles at Edmonton, Game 2, on TBS. And that is it for the sports for today. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you have a great day, everybody, and please stay safe.